completed her MPH in epidemiology at the Mailman School of Public Health in May 2009 and received the Anna C. Gelman Award for Excellence. Ms. Murray is interested in the intersections between infectious disease and climate change. She currently works in occupational health research and is applying to doctoral programs in epidemiology to begin in fall 2011. Her talk today presents the results of her master's thesis research.
Thank you. So I'm switching topics a little bit from what we've heard so far this morning, and my talk's a little bit more technical, but I'll try to skip over some of the complex things, and if you have questions, you can ask me about those at the end. I have no relationships to disclose. So first, a little bit of background on H5N1, which is more commonly known as bird flu. The rapid global spread of H5N1 has raised concerns that this strain may have the potential to cause a severe pandemic. Human infection with H5N1 was recognized in 1997 in a small outbreak in Hong Kong, which followed initial recognition of the virus in poultry in 1996. H5N1 then reappeared with greater virulence in 2003 and spread rapidly around the world, with 15 countries now reporting human cases. The first cases of H5N1 in Egypt occurred in early 2006, and Egypt currently accounts for nearly one quarter of the global total of human cases. And the case fatality rate globally is 60%, but in Egypt, the case fatality rate is actually much lower at 32%. Sorry, I have to go back one. Considerable effort has been expended on monitoring the genetics of H5N1 in order to identify viral mutants which may be capable of pandemic infection, but less research has addressed the epidemiologic factors of human infection with H5N1. In particular, although there has been recent suggestions that H5N1 incidence in humans is seasonal, this has not been critically evaluated. And in addition, the role of potential environmental drivers of infection seasonality have not been considered. Proposed drivers for influenza seasonality in general, which is also not well understood, fall into three categories: environmental drivers, sociological drivers, and biological drivers. One difficulty in understanding seasonality of influenza, regular influenza like H1N1 or H3N2, is the possibility that's been suggested by Dushoff et al. That seasonal changes in transmission rate are below measurement error. And this is due to a resonance between the intrinsic oscillation of infection and the seasonality. But this resonance depends on transmission parameters of influenza, such as the basic reproductive number, duration of immunity, and the infectious period. And these may be different for H5N1. In addition, H5N1 is primarily transmitted to humans from birds, so this removes the need to consider most sociological explanations for seasonality. Therefore, analysis of H5N1 may help understand seasonality of influenza in general. So the goal of this study was to ask two questions. Does H5N1 incidence in humans oscillate seasonally? And we also looked at poultry. And two, is this seasonality, if any, related to temperature, precipitation, relative humidity, or absolute humidity? So I'll just briefly go over this slide. The data for this study all came from freely accessible government or intergovernmental databases. The human cases came from the WHO's website, and we extracted cases from January 1st, 2006 to May 1st, 2008. And then the cases were coded by date of symptom onset or hospitalization, and to account for some error there, with some cases only having one or the other of those dates, we collected the data into 10-day windows. And within those windows, the human cases were recorded as binary, yes, no, any case, or no cases within that 10-day window. The poultry data came from the World Organization for Animal Health outbreak reports and was also coded into 10-day intervals with yes, no labeling. The climate data or weather data came from the NOAA website for the same time period, and absolute humidity was calculated from temperature, relative humidity, and dew point as vapor pressure. And these were also collected into 10-day intervals. In terms of analyzing the data, we used Fourier analysis, which is a technique more commonly used in engineering or economics, and actually comes from physics, and is used for processing signals or time series. And the benefit of using Fourier analysis is, in addition to the fact that it doesn't require a large sample size, is that it can directly estimate the frequency or period that best fits the data, so we can get a statistical estimate of the season length, and also we can get a statistical estimate of whether or not there is seasonality. So why not use something more simple like Poisson regression? Well, in our case, the data was highly heteroscedastic. It was multicollinear. The weather data lacked independent distributions, and there was no log linearity, so Poisson regression was deemed inappropriate. Also, when you use Poisson regression to model seasonality, you have to put in the model an estimate of the season length, and since we were trying to determine if there was seasonality, we couldn't use Poisson regression. So now our results. Is human H5N1 seasonal? The short answer is yes. If using Bartlett's Kolmogorov-Smirnov test, which compares the output of the Fourier analysis to a pattern of white noise, we saw that the incidence pattern was significantly different from white noise, with a p-value of 2%. And then looking at specifically at the best fit frequency for the data, we used the Fisher's Kappa test for periodicity, which showed us borderline significant period with a p-value of about 10%. And this translates into a season length of 14 months. So one thing to remember here is that we only had 48 cases that occurred in Egypt over the entire time period. So we considered this p-value to be a reasonably significant indicator of seasonality. So this figure here just compares the output of our Fourier analysis to what actually happened in human cases. The black line here is the actual total number of human cases in any 10-day interval during the time period. And the red line shows the sine curve calculated from our best fit Fourier frequency with the 14-month period. So you can see that the Fourier curve, the red curve, shows peaks that are approximately coincident with the peaks in human incidence. So then what about poultry? Poultry also showed a significant seasonality with the Bartlett's Kolmogorov-Smirnov test. And in this case, the season length that best fit the data was 7 months. It's interesting to note that the human cases, which in this figure, the red line is the human case Fourier analysis, and the black line is the poultry Fourier analysis. And you can see that the peak human cases don't really coincide with peak poultry cases, but poultry outbreaks occurred nearly constantly over the entire time period, and the poultry Fourier analysis doesn't fit visually with the actual poultry incidence as well as the human case did. So then lastly, what about the weather? So all of the four weather variables that we evaluated showed seasonality with a strong Bartlett's Kolmogorov-Smirnov p-value of less than 1% in all cases, and they all had the same best fit 14-month period, like with H5N1 in humans. And here I've just put the ranges for temperature, precipitation, relative humidity, and absolute humidity over the time period. So you can see that they're not like New York style seasons, but there is seasonal variation. And since the best fit frequency was the same for the weather conditions and the human cases, we could do a cross-spectral Fourier analysis, which is a method for comparing statistically two different Fourier curves. And this cross-spectral analysis uses a statistic called the squared coherency, and this can take a value anywhere from 0, which indicates no linear relationship between the two curves, to 1, which indicates a strong linear relationship between the curves. And in all cases, for comparing temperature to H5N1, precipitation to H5N1, and the same with relative and absolute humidity, this squared coherency was very high, ranging from, 0.93 to 0.95. So this indicates a strong linear relationship between the seasonality of the weather variables and the human H5N1 cases. So now a little bit of background about seasonal flu to understand how these results compare. With the H5N1 in humans, we saw a season of 14 months, and this would expect a peak every year of influenza, with every sixth year the peak would fall outside the calendar year, and the peak would shift in position over the course of each year, being 2 months later. And this is similar to a pattern that's been seen with seasonal influenza in tropical regions, where several studies have found that the number and timing of peaks of influenza incidents varies from year to year, and that can differ between countries. And what do these results say about transmissibility of H5N1? Well, the peak conditions for H5N1 in humans in our study were a moderate temperature of approximately 25 degrees Celsius, low precipitation of about 0.14 millimeters per day, low relative humidity of about 46%, and moderate absolute humidity of about 18%. For comparison, the established optimal conditions for aerosol transmission are a temperature of 8 degrees Celsius, relative humidity of 25%, and absolute humidity below 12%. Although aerosol transmission has also shown to peak at a combined condition of 65% relative humidity and 20 degrees Celsius. So these optimal conditions for aerosol transmission don't overlap that well with the conditions we saw at peak human incidents. But on the other hand, droplet transmission has been demonstrated to be highly successful at 30 degrees Celsius, regardless of relative humidity. So that may be what's happening here. So the three main take-home conclusions: H5N1 does appear to occur seasonally in a similar pattern to seasonal influenza in the tropics, with peaks varying in number and timing per year. In Egypt, H5N1 in humans should be expected to peak once a year, with a moving peak that occurs approximately 2 months later each year, although we don't currently know why this is. And H5N1 may be occurring via droplet or contact transmission in Egypt based on the conditions that we see in weather factors during peak incidence periods. So protective equipment, including face masks, may help reduce infection among those with close contact poultry or birds. So I just have a couple people to acknowledge. I'd like to thank Carolyn Korvs, Guillaume Constantin de Magny, and Rita Caldwell for their help understanding how to model these data. And thank you, and if you have any questions, I'd be happy to take them.
Questions? Yes.
No, the question was, do we look at climate change projections? And we haven't done that yet, but that's one of the things I'm hoping to do when I go back for doctoral research.